Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for Thursday, November 22nd, 2012.
Our creeds, bellies swollen with your seed, we are waiting. Hardened shards of broken bread, small consolations in your stead, soured wine and tonic for the pain. Dutifully we take our fill, still we long to see your face again. Keening for the dawn as such, stirs the memory of your touch, we are waiting. Are waiting. La, da, da, da. La, da, 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 da. La, da, 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 shriveling as we all increase, we are waiting. Wearied eyes take in the sights, smarting under tinseled lights, we are waiting. Break the too familiar word, hearing strains we've never heard, a double edge that pierces through the pain. And all that we shall see fulfilled.
That was Keening for the Dawn, the title track from Steve Bell's new Christmas CD, called Keening for the Dawn. This is Steve's 17th CD and as one reviewer says, quite possibly his finest. He's on the phone with us tonight from Winnipeg to talk about the new CD and how it came to be birthed. Good evening, Steve.
How are you?
Not bad. Now, Keening for the Dawn is your second Christmas CD, and so it leads to the natural question of why another Christmas CD?
Well, I think, you know, like my albums really aren't really about sort of putting out a commercial project. They're more just they're almost like a documenting my journals, which my journal entries, which are my songs. And it just in the last year and a half, I've really been struggling with the whole season of Christmas and frustrated with what it's become and trying to desperately recover some of its, you know, deeper meanings. And so when you start to do that work as an artist, then the songs just start coming.
Right.
And at a certain point, you just sort of realize, oh my goodness, here comes an album, and you feel some responsibility to document it for others. So there you go.
Now, with this one, too, I think the other thing I always find really interesting is when people are recording Christmas CDs, they're often doing it like months ahead of time because you've got the whole process of the recording, the mixing, you know, putting it together, getting it ready, packaged and everything. How is that in terms of your own creative process? Is that a challenge for you to do that sort of out of the season? Or, as you say, this is part of your own journey, and that was when these songs were ready to be put to recording?
Yeah, it's just part of the journey. And actually, you know, putting it together out of season was actually kind of nice because you didn't have all the goofy trappings of the season. So it was sort of like going away, so you could focus on it. It was actually a neat experience. I was really writing these songs, a lot of them, around Easter time last year, And there was just something about that and realizing how this story of Christmas is profoundly connected to Easter and to some of the other seasons that I may not have even picked up on had I been doing it at the Christmas time. So it was, for me, it was a good thing.
Well, looking at that in terms of actually preparing and getting into the studio, how did you get your sort of your mindset as you were going in and you're recording Christmas stuff?
You know, it's hard to describe, but once you get into that zone, it's not hard to keep your mindset. It's actually hard to have any other mindset. You become so focused on the material and so focused on the recordings that you're almost surprised when you walk out and it's a sunny day and it's not Christmas time, you know, because that's just, you're just there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I don't know if it's the artistic thing or whatever, but you get so wrapped up in it that there's almost no other reality. It's kind of almost problematic.
Now, did you sort of find yourself, you said you were writing some of these around Easter time and that, were you sort of finding there being kind of a leakage between Christmas and Easter, both in terms of how you were celebrating Easter? You know, Christmas was sort of leaking over into that, and then Easter maybe possibly even leaking over into some of the stuff you're doing Christmas-wise.
Oh, absolutely. But see, here's the thing, you know, is that, I mean, one of the reasons why Christmas has become so easily trivialized is that we've divorced it from the all the other seasons that the church celebrates throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Easter being particular, that, I mean, the whole Christmas story means very little until it finds its completion in Easter time. And so it really is one story. It isn't separate stories. And I think that's part of what I'm trying to do with the work I'm doing is to recover an ongoing sense of the whole story of which we're celebrating this piece or that piece.
Well, you often find that divorce is coming both in society, like in the mainstream society where you've got Christmas and Christmas trees and angels and all these things, and then Easter with the Easter bunny and eggs and all that. But then even in the church, and especially in the evangelical church, where there's less of an emphasis on that whole church calendar.
And I think that's problematic. I think that's one of the reasons why these seasons have become less than they ought to be. I mean, for instance, I mean, if you're following the church calendar, you know, Christmas Day, the 25th, is the Feast of Nativity. The 26th, which has become Boxing Day, sadly, on the church calendar, is the Feast of the Martyrdom of St. Stephen. And the church, you know, in the early centuries, wisely put the Martyrdom of St. Stephen the day after Christmas Day, to remind people that this isn't a gooey little story about a baby. This child upset people. This child, there's big, big, big pushback on this story. And to over-sentimentalize it and make it a nostalgic thing is to really do a disservice to the story. This child came and unsettled everything. And the church, so the day after is the Feast of St. Stephen. 2 days after that is the Feast of the Death of the Holy Innocents, all the children that mm-hmm. were slaughtered. Again, because this particular one child upset the apple cart. So the fact that we have not celebrated the whole church year and been kind of just handpicked a couple things that we liked has really served to rob the major seasons of their impact, I think.
Well, and I think, you know, and that comes through in some of the songs. And what I want to do is take a really quick break here. And then when we come back, I do want to get into Keening for the Dawn and sort of how all of this is melded into some of the songs and the songs that you put together. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Steve Bell and talk about one of the main influences on Keening for the Dawn. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Some captive Israel that mourns in lonely exile here until the Son of God appears. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel. Come with all you bring. We see you now disguised as everything. to us the hidden path of prudence shown, and teach us in her ways to go. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel.
All of us sprung from one deep.
Welcome back to Arts Connection, and you've been listening to O Come, Emmanuel, from Keening for the Dawn by Steve Bell. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Steve. And one thing I was looking at, and you were talking about how all of this coming together, but the neat thing about this album is the partnership that you and British poet Malcolm Gite had put together. Tell our listeners how that whole partnership came about.
Oh, that was magnificent. Last summer, I sang at the C.S. Lewis Summer Institute in Cambridge and Oxford. So I was the guest singer, and Malcolm Gite was—he's a British poet, a brilliant upcoming poet—and he was the opening keynote speaker. And honestly, Rob, I don't think I've ever met a more animated person. I mean, he just—he's so lively and so brilliant and so enthused. He just animated your whole spirit. And anyways, I fell in love with him. I fell in love with his poetry, and I started to really... We became friends while I was there. But when I came home, I really started to dig into his poetry. And a lot of those poems of his, the sonnets of his, have become the fodder for the songs of his new album.
Well, I like in O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, I mean, some of the... when he's citing his poetry, some of the wording in that is, you know, like, and find no virtue in the virtual. I mean, there's just...
I know. He's a beautiful, beautiful poet, and he sees things that he sees behind things, which I think is the role of the poet, is not to rhyme and delight us with their ability to entertain, but it's to see behind things and help expose what's deeply there. And he's certainly one of those great mystical poets who understands the currents that are flowing below the surface of our experience and brings them up so that we can, you know, look at them. He's absolutely astonishing.
Well, and I think people will say the same thing of you and your lyrics. So how do two people with that type of insight and depth in lyric and word and use of word work together to create something that is so masterful as Keening for the Dawn?
Well, you know, it's what I find really interesting is that when you find people that are really truly great at what they do, there often is an amazing humility to them. And when I first started basically pillaging Malcolm's poems for these songs, and of course when you put them to music, you have to change some of the lyrics a little bit so they fit and all that kind of stuff, and I'm thinking, my goodness, this, what if he's going to be offended or insulted? And I finally, in the spring, I emailed him and I said, Malcolm, you just need to know I've been working with your poems but I've changed them, and what do you think? And I sent him a couple, and he was so ecstatic. And and then I said, listen, I'm coming. So I flew over to England, and we spent a week working on this stuff together. And he just is almost devoid of pretense. One of the most humble men I've ever met in my life. And all he wants is to communicate. And if it means changing his poem so it works with the song, he doesn't care. He just wants to get these insights out there because he loves God's creation and he wants to be part of its redemption and its growth. So it was pretty easy. It was surprisingly easy to work with him.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things, too, that came out of all those conversations, and one, especially one conversation we had, Malcolm and Jeremy Begbie, was the hearing the word Keening for the first time.
Well, yeah. So this is where you start to go into how God seems to work, or at least with me anyways. But it was last summer when I was in England, and I was actually at Malcolm's house, and I said, hey, there's a theologian in Cambridge here. I don't know if you know him, but I've been reading his material for years, and he writes a lot about theology through the arts, and his name is Jeremy Begbie. And Malcolm and his wife, Maggie, just burst out laughing because Jeremy goes to his church. And within about 15 minutes, I was sitting in an English pub, you know, tipping a pint with Malcolm and Jeremy. So it was a really nice little moment, and we had this lovely conversation about all sorts of things. But at one point, one of them, and I don't remember which one, just in a sentence used the word keening. And I didn't really know what the word meant. I could sort of guess, but I've never used it myself. But it kind of went through me like a hot knife. I just somehow, it was like there's electricity to the word, and I asked what it was about. And keening really is about a primal longing for dawn, you know, in the midst of night. It's in a desperate darkness, but it's also one of hope because it actually believes in dawning. So it comes out of a place of desperation, but it's absolutely the cry out is for the dawn that we fully expect to come. It's a beautiful word.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I came home and I just kept on coming up for me, kept on coming up, approaching Christmas and some of my own disappointments and frustrations with the season and even with the world and how it goes and some of the horrible things I've seen in my travels and excuse me, the war zones I've traveled through and you know, sort of lamenting the cruelty that human beings are capable of. And I just realized that in my soul there was a profound keening for dawn. And the phrase came to me, and then the song came.
Well, so how did you relate all of that to Christmas?
Well, basically, the whole Advent season is really about keening. It really is about the ache of if you think about the whole process of maternity and the ache of barrenness, and then the joy of realizing that one is not barren and that a child is coming. And so it the whole Advent season really is about keening for a dawning, a new life, a new light, a new celebration, a new joy, a new paradigm that we know is coming, but we feel the agony now of the distance between what's coming and what's here at the moment.
So in looking at the CD and how it came together, did Keening for the Dawn come first, and then you built the other songs around that in terms of your song selection, or did that come afterwards and then became a theme and helped you decide in the song selection for the rest of the CD?
Well, Keening for the Dawn came first, and I thought I was going to do just an Advent album with no references at all to actual Nativity or Epiphany. And I thought, well, that'd be nice, and so that's what I was planning. But when I went on a retreat last February to work on the song. And while I was there, I got this email from Malcolm saying he'd written this Epiphany sonnet, and what did I think? And it's really kind of funny because I wasn't planning to sort of do the whole broad season of Advent, Nativity, and Epiphany. I just thought I'd do an Advent album. But the Epiphany sonnet was so stunning, and I was right in the middle of writing Keening for the Dawn, but I had to drop everything, and I wrote Epiphany on the Jordan that week. So even though Keening was the song I'd started with, Epiphany was the song I first completed. And all of a sudden I realized, oh my goodness, those are the bookends of the album. And so I needed to do the whole season. So that's kind of how it took its shape.
Okay. Is there any one song, I know this is an unfair question, but is there any one song on there that's a particular favorite?
I really like... Yeah, well, I think Epiphany on the Jordan is one of my favorites. I think that's I think there's a lot going on in that song.
Anything that ended up on the cutting floor that you really would have liked to have got on?
No, you know, surprisingly, this album kind of went down like butter. Usually albums, you got two or three songs that you want on there so badly, but they're just not working, and they're not working at the last minute. You have to cut them, and there's almost like a loss of a child or something.
Yeah, or you're looking at it, and finally the length of the album's getting too long, and you know that it's not going to sustain, you know, people aren't going to listen very much.
It doesn't fit sonically. It just felt like a sore thumb or something. There's always one or two of those.
And there wasn't with this one?
No, this one, I mean, it was kind of a funny process. Like, everything we tried worked. Every musician that we brought in worked. It was a real joy. Albums can be a real struggle. And this one was just kind of wasn't.
Wow.
I mean, it was a profound journey for me, and I feel exhausted from it, actually. I feel exhausted from the album emotionally and spiritually in a way I haven't in other words. I think because, I don't know, this one was a deeper journey than I've taken before.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the actual process of recording it, it just kind of went like butter. It was really fun.
Wow. Well, we need to take, looking at the time, we need to take one final break, and then we're going to come back and finish our conversation with Steve Bell. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
been split and the water spilled and streamed around that man like a quickening rain. A quickening rain. The word behind all worlds revealed that God in man makes everything new again. New again. This word of God to his beloved, it settled on me like a dove. He calls us to step into that river, to die and rise to life and love. So graciously extends to me her sin to tread the sacred waters of this mystery of. What can be said about a mystery except to say that the last word can never be said. Said, best leave that to poetry, kindling words for quickening the dead, the living dead. Pure single heart behind all things, each to the other by the Spirit sing. Extends to me a sinner to tread the sacred waters of this mystery of love. He calls us to step into that river, to die and rise to life and love forever. And so graciously extends to me sinner to tread the sacred waters of this mystery of love.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Epiphany on the Jordan from Steve Bell's Keening for the Dawn CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to wrap up our conversation with Steve Bell. One of the things that's been happening is you've been touring around in support of the CD. Any plans to be in the Kitchener-Waterloo area later this month or December?
Yeah, I mean, in December. Here, I've got my computer open here. I'll try to find this while we're chatting. Yep, I'm going to be, goodness, Kitchener, December 14th, Woodstock, December 13th, Cambridge, December 15th.
So looking at that, how's the touring going so far?
Well, we just started. I'm just home. I got home at midnight last night from B.C. I was out in Victoria and Vernon and where else was I? Somewhere else, I can't remember. Surrey. And so it was the first weekend, and I'm always very nervous about it because it's a bit of a new band configuration, and it takes a while for everybody to sort of settle in and get used to each other on stage. But it was really a great weekend, lots of fun. and the response to the album and the material was quick and enthusiastic. So I'm really looking forward to the rest of the time.
What's been the reaction to the album so far?
Well, so I think it's been great, and I know it's been really, really wonderful. And I was worried about it because it's not a comfort food album. It's not a whole bunch of your favorite Christmas songs, you know, that you're going to kind of put on at quietly while people are listening. Or having dinner. It's a listening album, and it draws on themes that aren't less traveled by, you know, on a Christmas album. So I was kind of worried that people kind of put it on and kind of go, it's not really very Christmassy.
Well, and even songs that are familiar, like O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, you break in with Malcolm's poetry, and that brings a whole new experience and a whole new level of understanding to it.
Yeah, and I mean, that particular song is O Come, O Come, Emmanuel is a very important song, and we're so used to these songs that we stop hearing them, and that's why it's kind of nice to put a new frame on them, and we kind of bluegrassed up a bit. And
well, I was going to say, I like the arrangement, because it's not the, you know, O Come, you know, that whole choral type of sound.
That other, and the somberness. Quite.
Yeah.
But it should be an exuberant, I mean, this story is like a downhill, like, you know, straight down ski hill, and it's we should never approach a story like this without a crash helmet on. It's Christmas has just become so tamed, and I think it's not that kind of season at all.
Well, one last thing, just as we get going here, where can people find out more about Keening for the Dawn and when you're doing some touring and stuff like that?
The best place is stevebell.com. Everything is there. You can buy the album. You can order it by phone over the internet. All the information about the concerts is coming up. I know that if you have a Christian bookstore in your area, they'll likely have the CD there as well. So there's few and fewer stores these days, but if you have one in your area, they probably have it.
Okay, great. Well, Steve, thanks for your time tonight.
I appreciate it, Rob. Thank you.
And thank you. And thank you for listening to Arts Connection. Thank you to my guest, Steve Bell. And be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@selawministries.ca. That's selawministries.ca. Or follow us on Twitter @selaw13, selaw13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selav Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.